intended as much for Dooku as for Palpatine. Tell that to the one Obi-Wan left in pieces on Naboo. Empty bravado. Maul had been an animal. A skilled animal, but a beast nonetheless. Anakin. In the Force, Dooku could feel Kenobi's disapproval of Skywalker's boasting. And he could also feel Kenobi's effortless self-restraint in focusing on the matter at hand. This time, we do it together. Dooku's sharp eye picked at the tightening of Skywalker's droid hand on his lightsaber grip. I was about to say exactly that. Fine, then. Time to move this little comedy along. Dooku leaned forward, and his cloak of armor weave spread like wings. He lifted gently into the air and descended to the main level in a slow, dignified force glide. Touching down at the head of the situation table, he regarded the two Jedi from under a lifted brow.
Your weapons, please, gentlemen. Let's not make a mess of this in front of the Chancellor.
Obi-Wan lifted his lightsaber into the balanced, two-handed guard of Ataro, Qui-Gon style, and Yoda's. His blade crackled into existence, and the air smelled of lightning. You won't escape us this time, Dooku.
Escape you? Please.
Dooku allowed his customary mild smile to spread.
Do you think I orchestrated this entire operation with the intent to escape? I could have taken the Chancellor out system hours ago, but I have better things to do with my life than to babysit him while I wait for the pair of you to attempt to rescue.
Skywalker brought his lightsaber to a Sheen ready, hand of black-loved Durasteel cocked high at his shoulder, blade angling upward and away. This is a little more than an attempt, and a little less than a rescue. With a flourish, Dooku cast his cloak back from his right shoulder, clearing his sword arm, which he used to gesture idly at the pair of super battle droids still on the entrance balcony above.
Now please, gentlemen, must I order the droids to open fire? That becomes so untidy. What with blaster bolts bouncing about at random? Little danger to the three of us, of course, but I should certainly hate for any harm to come to the Chancellor.
Kenobi moved toward him with a slow, hypnotic grace, as though he floated on an invisible repulsor plate. Why do I find that difficult to believe? Skywalker mirrored him, swinging wide toward Dooku's flank. You weren't so particular about bloodshed on Geonosis.
Ah.
Dooku's smile spread even farther. And how is Senator Amidala?
Don't.
The thunderstorm that was Skywalker and the Force boiled with sudden power. Don't even speak her name. Dooku waved this aside. The lad's personal issues were too tiresome to pursue. He knew far too much already about Skywalker's messy private life.
I bear Chancellor Palpatine no ill will, foolish boy. He is neither soldier nor spy, whereas you and your friend here are both. It is only an unfortunate accident of history that he has chosen to defend a corrupt republic against my endeavor to reform it.
You mean destroy it? The Chancellor is a civilian. You and General Kenobi, on the other hand, are legitimate military targets. It is up to you whether you will accompany me as captives. A twitch of the Force brought his lightsaber to his hand with invisible speed, its brilliant scarlet blade angled downward at his side. Or as corpses. Now there's a coincidence, Kenobi replied dryly as he swung around Dooku to place the Count precisely between Skywalker and himself. You face the identical choice. Dooku regarded each of them in turn with impregnable calm. He lifted his blade in the Makashi salute and swept it again to a low guard.
Just because there are two of you, do not presume you have the advantage.
Oh, we know, Skywalker said, because there are two of you. Dooku barely managed to restrain a jolt of surprise. Or maybe I should say, were two of you, the young Jedi went on. We're onto your partner, Sidious. We tracked him all over the galaxy. He's probably in Jedi custody right now.
Is he? Dooku relaxed. He was terribly, terribly tempted to wink at Palpatine, but of course, that would never do. How fortunate for you. Quite simple in the end, he thought. Isolate Skywalker, slaughter Kenobi. Beyond that, it would be merely a matter of spinning Skywalker up into enough of a frenzy to break through his Jedi restraint and reveal the infinite vista of Sith power. Lord Sidious would take it from there. Surrender. Kenobi's voice deepened into finality. You will be given no further chance. Dooku lifted an eyebrow.
Unless one of you happens to be carrying Yoda in his pocket, I hardly think I shall need one.
The Force crackled between them, and the ship pitched and bucked under a new turbo laser barrage, and Dooku decided that the time had come. He flicked a false glance over his shoulder, a hint of distraction to draw the attack, and all three of them moved at once. The ship shuddered, and the red smoke surged from Anakin's spine into his arms and legs and head, and when Dooku gave the slightest glance of concern over his shoulder, distracted for half an instant, Anakin just couldn't wait anymore. He sprang, lightsaber angled for the kill. Obi-Wan leapt from Dooku's far side in perfect coordination, and they met in midair, for the Sith Lord was no longer between them. Anakin looked up just in time to glimpse the bottom of Dooku's rancor leather boot as it came down on his face and smacked him tumbling toward the floor. He reached into the Force to effortlessly right himself and touch down in perfect balance to spring again toward the lightning flares, scarlet against sky blue, that sprayed from clashing lightsabers as Dooku pressed Obi-Wan away with a succession of weaving, flourishing thrusts that drove the Jedi's blade out of line while they reached for his heart. Anakin launched himself at Dooku's back, and the Count half-turned, gesturing casually while holding Obi-Wan at bay with an elegant one-handed bind. Chairs leapt up from the situation table and whirled toward Anakin's head. He slashed the first one in half contemptuously, but the second caught him across the knees, and the third battered his shoulder and knocked him down. He snarled to himself and reached through the Force to pick up some chairs of his own. And the situation table itself slammed into him and drove him back to crush him against the wall. His lightsaber came loose from his slackening fingers and clattered across the tabletop to drop to the floor on the far side. And Dooku barely even seemed to be paying attention to him. Pinned, breathless, half-stunned, Anakin thought, "If this keeps up, I am going to get mad." While effortlessly deflecting a rain of blue-streaking cuts from Kenobi, Dooku felt the Force shove the situation table away from the wall and send it hurtling toward his back with astonishing speed. He barely managed to lift himself enough that he could backroll over it instead of having it shatter his spine.
"My, my," he said, chuckling. "The boy has some power after all."
His back roll brought him to his feet directly in front of the lad, who was charging, headlong and unarmed, after the table he had tossed, and was already thoroughly red in the face. "I'm twice the Jedi I was last time."
Oh, Dooku thought. Such a fragile little ego. Sidious will have to help him with that. But until then...
The grip of Skywalker's blade whistled through the air to meet his hand in perfect synchrony with a sweeping slash. "My powers have doubled since we last met."
"How lovely for you."
Dooku neatly sidestepped, cutting at the boy's leg. Yet Skywalker's blade met the cut as he passed, and he managed to sweep his blade behind his head to slap aside the casual thrust Dooku aimed at the back of his neck. But his clumsy charge had put him in Kenobi's path, so that the Jedi Master had to force roll over his partner's head, directly at Dooku's upraised blade. Kenobi drove a slash at the scarlet blade while he pivoted in the air, and again Dooku sidestepped so that now it was Kenobi in Skywalker's way.
"Really," Dooku said, "this is pathetic."
Oh, they were certainly energetic enough. leaping and whirling, raining blows almost at random, cutting chairs to pieces, and force hurling them in every conceivable direction, while Dooku continued in his gracefully methodical way to outmaneuver them so thoroughly it was all he could do to keep from laughing out loud. It was a simple matter of countering their tactics, which were depressingly straightforward. Skywalker was the swift one, whooshing here and there like a spastic hawk bat, attempting a Jedi variant of Neek in the middle so they could come at him from both sides, while Kenobi came on in a measured Shi'icho cadence, deliberate as a lumber droid, moving step by step, cutting off the angles, clumsy but relentlessly dogged as he tried to chivvy Dooku into a corner. Whereas all Dooku need do was to slip from one side to another and occasionally flip over a head here and there so that he could fight each of them in turn rather than both of them at the same time. He supposed that in their own milieu they might actually prove reasonably effective. It was clear that their style had been developed by fighting as a team against large numbers of opponents. They were not prepared to fight together against a single Force user. Certainly not one of Dooku's power. He, on the other hand, had always fought alone. It was laughably easy to keep the Jedi tripping and stumbling and getting in each other's way. They didn't even comprehend how utterly he dominated the combat. Because they fought as they had been trained, by releasing all desire and allowing the Force to flow through them, they had no hope of countering Dooku's mastery of Sith techniques. They had learned nothing since he had bested them on Geonosis. They allowed the Force to direct them. Dooku directed the Force. He drew their strikes to his parries and drove his own riposte with thrusts of dark power that suddenly altered the Jedi's balance and disrupted their timing. He could have slaughtered both of them as casually as that creature Maul had destroyed the Vigos of the Black Sun. However, only one death was in his plan, and this dumb show was becoming tiresome. Not to mention tiring. The dark power that served him went only so far, and he was, after all, not a young man. He leaned to a thrust at Kenobi's gut that the Jedi Master deflected with a rising parry, bringing them chest to chest, blades flaring, locked together a hand breadth from each other's throats. Your moves are too slow, Kenobi. Too predictable. You'll have to do better. Kenobi's response to this friendly word was to regard him with a twinkle of gentle amusement in his eye. Very well, then, the Jedi said, and shot straight upward over Dooku's head so fast it seemed he'd vanished. And in the space where Kenobi's chest had been was now only the blue lightning of Skywalker's blade driving straight for Dooku's heart. Only a desperate whirl to one side made what would have been a smoking hole in his chest into a line of scorch through his armor weave cloak. Dooku thought, "What?" He threw himself spinning up and away from the two Jedi to land on the situation table, disengaging for a moment to recover his composure. That had been entirely too close. But by the time his boots touched down, Kenobi was there to meet him, blade weaving through a defensive velocity so bewilderingly fast that Dooku dared not even try a strike. He threw a feint toward Kenobi's face, then dropped and spun in a reverse ankle sweep. But not only did Kenobi easily overleap this attack, Dooku nearly lost his own foot to a slash from Skywalker, who had again come out of nowhere and now carved through the table so that it collapsed under Dooku's weight and dumped the Sith Lord unceremoniously to the floor. This was not in the plan. Skywalker slammed his following strike down so hard that the shock of deflecting it buckled Dooku's elbows. Dooku threw himself into a back roll that brought him to his feet, and Kenobi's blade was there to meet his neck. Only a desperate whirling slash block, coupled with a wheel kick that caught Kenobi on the thigh, bought him enough time to leap away again, and when he touched down, Skywalker was already there. The first overhand chop of Skywalker's blade slid off Dooku's instinctive guard. The second bent Dooku's wrist,
The third flash of blue forced Dooku's scarlet blade so far to the inside that his own lightsaber scorched his shoulder, and Dooku was forced to give ground. Dooku felt himself blanch. Where had this come from? Skywalker came on, mechanically inexorable, impossibly powerful, a destroyer droid with a lightsaber. Each step a blow, and each blow a step. Dooku backed away as fast as he dared. Skywalker stayed right on top of him. Dooku's breath went short and hard. He no longer tried to block Skywalker's strikes, but only to guide them slanting away. He could not meet Skywalker's strength to strength. Not only did the boy wield tremendous reserves of Force energy, but his sheer physical power was astonishing. And only then did Dooku understand that he'd been suckered. Skywalker's Sheen ready stance had been a ruse, as had his Ataro gymnastics. The boy was a DeGemso stylist, and as fine a one as Dooku had ever seen. His own elegant Makashi simply did not generate the kinetic power to meet DeGemso head to head, especially not while also defending against the second attacker. It was time to alter his own tactics. He dropped low and spun into another reverse ankle sweep. The weakness of DeGemso was its lack of mobility. That slapped Skywalker's boot sharply enough to throw the young Jedi off balance, giving Dooku the opportunity to leap away. Only to find himself again facing the wheel of blue lightning that was Kenobi's blade. Dooku decided that the comedy had ended. Now it was time to kill. Kenobi's master had been Qui-Gon Jinn, Dooku's own Padawan. Dooku had fenced Qui-Gon thousands of times, and he knew every weakness of the Ataro form, with its ridiculous acrobatics. He drove a series of flashing thrusts toward Kenobi's legs to draw the Jedi Master into a flipping overhead leap so that Dooku could burn through his spine from kidneys to shoulder blades. And this image, this plan, was so clear in Dooku's mind that he almost failed to notice that Kenobi met every one of his thrusts without so much as moving his feet, staying perfectly centered, perfectly balanced, blade never moving a millimeter more than was necessary, deflecting without effort, riposting with flickering strikes and stabs swifter than the tongue of a Garolian ghost viper. And when Dooku felt Skywalker regain his feet and stride once more toward his back, he finally registered the source of that blinding defensive velocity Kenobi had used a moment ago. And only then, belatedly, did he understand that Kenobi's Ataro and Shi'icho had been ploys as well. Kenobi had become a master of Sarisu. Dooku found himself having a sudden, unexpected, overpowering, and entirely distressing bad feeling about this. His farce had suddenly, inexplicably spun from humorous to deadly serious, and was tumbling rapidly toward terrifying. Realization burst through Dooku's consciousness like the blossoming fireballs of dying ships outside. This pair of Jedi fools had somehow managed to become entirely dangerous. These clowns might just possibly actually be able to beat him. No sense taking chances. Even his master would agree with that. Lord Sidious could come up with a new plan more easily than a new apprentice. He gathered the Force once more in a single indrawn breath that summoned power from throughout the universe. The slightest whip crack of that power, negligent as a flick of his wrist, sent Kenobi flying backward to crash hard against the wall. But Dooku didn't have time to enjoy it. Skywalker was all over him. The shining blue lightsaber whirled and spat, and every overhand chop crashed against Dooku's defense with the unstoppable power of a meteor strike. The Sith Lord spent lavishly of his reserve of the Force merely to meet these attacks without being cut in half. And Skywalker was getting stronger. Each parry cost Dooku more power than he'd used to throw Kenobi across the room. Each block aged him a decade. He decided he'd best revise his strategy once again.
He no longer even tried to strike back. Force exhaustion began to close down his perceptions, drawing his consciousness back down to his physical form, trapping him within his own skull until he could barely even feel the contours of the room around him. He dimly sensed stairs at his back, stairs that led up to the entrance balcony. He retreated up them, using the higher ground for leverage. But Skywalker just kept on coming, tirelessly ferocious. That blue blade was everywhere, flashing and whirling faster and faster until Dooku saw the room through an electric haze. And now, Kenobi was back in the picture. With a shout of the Force, he shot like a torpedo up the stairs behind Skywalker, and Dooku decided that under these rather extreme circumstances, it was at least arguably permissible for a gentleman to cheat. "Guards!" he said to the pair of super battle droids that still stood at attention to either side of the entrance. "Open fire!" Instantly, the two droids sprang forward and lifted their hands. Energy hammered out from the heavy blasters built into their arms. Skywalker whirled, and his blade batted every blast back at the droids, whose mirror-polished carapace armor deflected the bolts again. Galvaned particle beams screeched through the room in blinding ricochets. Kenobi reached the top of the stairs, and a single slash of his lightsaber dismantled both droids. Before their pieces could even hit the floor, Dooku was in motion, landing a spinning sidestamp that folded Skywalker in half. He used his last burst of dark power to continue his spin into a blindingly fast wheel kick that brought his heel against the point of Kenobi's chin with a crack, like the report of a huge boar slug thrower, knocking the Jedi Master back down the stairs. Sounded like he'd broken his neck. Wouldn't that be lovely? There was no sense in taking chances, however. While Kenobi's bonelessly limp body was still tumbling toward the floor far below, Dooku sent a surge of energy through the Force. Kenobi's fall suddenly accelerated, like a missile, burning the last of its drives before impact. The Jedi Master struck the floor at a steep angle, skidded along it, and slammed into the wall so hard the hydrofoamed permacrete buckled and collapsed onto him. This Dooku found exceedingly gratifying. Now, as for Skywalker, which was as far as Dooku got, because by the time his attention returned to the younger Jedi, his vision was rather completely obstructed by the sole of a boot approaching his face with something resembling terminal velocity. The impact was a blast of white fire, and there was a second impact against his back that was the balcony rail. And then the room turned upside down, and he fell toward the ceiling, but not really, of course. It only felt that way because he had flipped over the rail, and he was falling head first toward the floor, and neither his arms nor his legs were paying any attention to what he was trying to make them do. The Force seemed to be busy elsewhere, and really, the whole process was entirely mortifying. He was barely able to summon a last surge of dark power before what would have been a disabling impact. The Force cradled him, cushioning his fall and setting him on his feet. He dusted himself off and fixed a supercilious gaze on Skywalker, who now stood upon the balcony looking down at him. And Dooku couldn't hold the stare. He found this reversal of their original positions oddly unsettling. There was something troublingly appropriate about it. Seeing Skywalker standing where Dooku himself had stood only moments ago, it was as though he was trying to remember a dream he'd never actually had. He pushed this aside, drawing once more upon the certain knowledge of his personal invincibility to open a channel to the Force. Power flowed into him, and the weight of his years dropped away. He lifted his blade and beckoned. Skywalker leapt from the balcony. Even as the boy hurtled downward, Dooku felt a new twist in the currents of the Force between them, and he finally understood. He understood how Skywalker was getting stronger, why he no longer spoke, how he had become a machine of battle. He understood why Sidious had been so interested in him for so long. Skywalker was a natural. There was a thermonuclear furnace where his heart should be, and it was burning through the firewalls of his Jedi training. He held the Force in the clench of a white-hot fist. He was half Sith already, and he didn't even know it. This boy had the gift of fury. And even now, he was holding himself back. Even now, as he landed at Dooku's flank and rained blows upon the Sith Lord's defenses, even as he drove Dooku backward step after step, Dooku could feel how Skywalker kept his fury banked behind walls of will, walls that were hardened by some uncontrollable dread. Dread, Dooku surmised, of himself. Of what might happen if he should ever allow that furnace he used for a heart to go supercritical. Dooku slipped aside from an overhand chop and sprang backward.
I sense great fear in you. You are consumed by it. Hero with no fear indeed. You're a fraud, Skywalker. You are nothing but a posturing child.
He pointed his lightsaber at the young Jedi like an accusing finger.
Aren't you a little old to be afraid of the dark?
Skywalker leapt for him again, and this time Dooku met the boy's charge easily. They stood nearly toe-to-toe, blades flashing faster than the eye could see, but Skywalker had lost his edge. A simple taunt was all that had been required to shift the focus of his attention from winning the fight to controlling his own emotions. The angrier he got, the more afraid he became, and the fear fed his anger in turn. Like the proverbial Corellian multipede, now that he had started thinking about what he was doing, he could no longer walk. Dooku allowed himself to relax. He felt that spirit of playfulness coming over him again as he and Skywalker spun around each other in their lethal dance. Whatever fun was to be had, he should enjoy while he could. Then Sidious, for some reason, decided to intervene.
Don't fear what you're feeling, Anakin. Use it! He barked in Palpatine's voice. Call upon your fury. Focus it, and he cannot stand against you. Rage is your weapon. Strike now! Strike! Kill him!
Dooku thought blankly.
Kill me?
He and Skywalker paused for one single final instant, blades locked together, staring at each other, past a sizzling cross of scarlet against blue. And in that instant, Dooku found himself wondering in bewildered astonishment if Sidious had suddenly lost his mind. Didn't he understand the advice he'd just given? Whose side was he on anyway? And through the cross of their blades, he saw in Skywalker's eyes the promise of hell. And he felt a sickening presentiment that he already knew the answer to that question. Treachery is the way of the Sith. Chapter 4, Jedi Trap. This is the death of Count Dooku. A starburst of clarity blossoms within Anakin Skywalker's mind when he says to himself, "Oh, I get it now," and discovers that the fear within his heart can be a weapon too. It is that simple and that complex, and it is final. Dooku is dead already. The rest is mere detail. The play is still on. The comedy of lightsabers flashes and snaps and hisses. Dooku and Skywalker, a one-time-only command performance for an audience of one. Jedi and Sith and Sith and Jedi, spinning, whirling, crashing together, slashing and chopping, parrying, binding, slipping and whipping, and ripping the air around them with snarls of power. And all for nothing. Because a nuclear flame has consumed Anakin Skywalker's Jedi restraint.
And fear becomes fury without effort, and fury is a blade that makes his lightsaber into a toy. The play goes on, but the suspense is over. It has become mere pantomime, as intricate and as meaningless as the space-time curves that guide galactic clusters through a measureless cosmos. Dooku's decades of combat experience are irrelevant. His mastery of swordplay is useless. His vast wealth, his political influence, impeccable breeding, immaculate manners, exquisite taste, all the pursuits and points of pride to which he has devoted so much of his time and attention over the long, long years of his life are now chains hung upon his spirit, bending his neck before the axe. Even his knowledge of the Force has become a joke. It is this knowledge that shows him his death, makes him handle it, turn it this way and that in his mind, examine it in detail like a black gemstone so cold it burns. Dooku's elegant farce has degenerated into pathetic melodrama, and not one shed tear will mark the passing of its hero. But for Anakin, in the fight there is only terror and rage. Only he stands between death and the two men he loves best in all the world, and he can no longer afford to hold anything back. That imaginary Dead Star dragon tries its best to freeze away his strength, to whisper to him that Dooku has beaten him before, that Dooku has all the power of the darkness, to remind him how Dooku took his hand, how Dooku could strike down even Obi-Wan himself seemingly without effort. And now Anakin is all alone, and he will never be a match for any Lord of the Sith. But Palpatine's words, "Rage is your weapon," have given Anakin permission to unseal the shielding around his furnace heart, and all his fears and all his doubts shrivel in its flame. When Count Dooku flies at him, blade flashing, Watto's fist cracks out from Anakin's childhood to knock the Sith Lord tumbling back. When with all the power that the dark side can draw from throughout the universe, Dooku hurls a jagged fragment of the Durasteel table, Shmi Skywalker's gentle murmur, "I knew you would come for me, Anakin," smashes it aside. His head has been filled with the smoke from his smothered heart for far too long. It has been the thunder that darkens his mind. On Arganar, on Jabim, in the Tusken camp on Tatooine, that smoke had clouded his mind, had blinded him and left him flailing in the dark, a mindless machine of slaughter. But here, now, within this ship, this microscopic cell of life in the infinite sterile desert of space, his firewalls have opened so that the terror and the rage are out there, in the fight, instead of in his head, and Anakin's mind is clear as a crystal bell. In that pristine clarity, there is only one thing he must do. Decide. So he does. He decides to win. He decides that Dooku should lose the same hand he took. Decision is reality here. His blade moves simultaneously with his will, and blue fire vaporizes black Corellian nano-silk and disintegrates flesh and shears bone, and away falls a Sith Lord's lightsaber hand, trailing smoke that tastes of charred meat and burned hair. The hand falls with a bar of scarlet blaze still extending from its spastic death grip, and Anakin's heart sings for the fall of that red blade. He reaches out, and the Force catches it for him. And then, Anakin takes Dooku's other hand as well. Dooku crumples to his knees, face blank, mouth slack, and his weapon whirs through the air to the victor's hand. And Anakin finds his vision of the future happening before his eyes, two blades at Count Dooku's throat. But here, now, the truth belies the dream. Both lightsabers are in his hands, and the one in his hand of flesh flares with the synthetic bloodshine of a Sith blade. Dooku, cringing, shrinking with dread, still finds some hope in his heart that he is wrong,
that Palpatine has not betrayed him, that this has all been proceeding according to plan. Until he hears, "Good, Anakin. Good. I knew you could do it." And registers this is Palpatine's voice, and feels within the darkest depths of all he is, the approach of the words that are to come next. "Kill him," Palpatine says. "Kill him now." In Skywalker's eyes, he sees only flames.
"Chancellor, please!"
he gasps, desperate and helpless, his aristocratic demeanor invisible, his courage only a bitter memory. He is reduced to begging for his life, as so many of his victims have.
"Please, you promised me immunity. We had a deal. Help me!"
And his begging gains him a share of mercy equal to that which he has dispensed. "A deal only if you released me," Palpatine replies, cold as intergalactic space. "Not if you used me as bait to kill my friends." And he knows then that all has indeed been going according to plan. Sidious's plan, not his own. This had been a Jedi trap indeed, but Jedi were not the quarry. They were the bait. "Anakin," Palpatine says quietly, "finish him." Years of Jedi training make Anakin hesitate. He looks down upon Dooku and sees not a Lord of the Sith, but a beaten, broken, cringing old man. "I shouldn't..." But when Palpatine barks, "Do it! Now!" Anakin realizes that this isn't actually an order, that it is, in fact, nothing more than what he's been waiting for his whole life. Permission. And Dooku, as he looks up into the eyes of Anakin Skywalker for the final time, Count Dooku knows that he has been deceived, not just today, but for many, many years. That he has never been the true apprentice. That he has never been the heir to the power of the Sith. He has been only a tool. His whole life, all his victories, all his struggles, all his heritage, all his principles and his sacrifices, everything he's done, everything he owns, everything he's been, all his dreams and grand vision for the future empire and the army of the Sith, have been only a pathetic sham. Because all of them, all of him, add up only to this. He has existed only for this. This. To be the victim of Anakin Skywalker's first cold-blooded murder. First, but not, he knows, the last. Then the blades crossed at his throat, uncross like scissors. Snip. And all of him becomes nothing at all. Murderer and murdered each stared blindly, but only the murderer blinked. "I did that." The severed head's stare was fixed on something beyond living sight. The desperate plea frozen in place on its lips echoed silence. The headless torso collapsed with a slowly fading sigh from the cauterized gape of its trachea, folding forward at the waist as though making obeisance before the power that had ripped away its life. The murderer blinked again. "Who am I?" Was he the slave boy on a desert planet, valued for his astonishing gift with machines? Was he the legendary pod racer, the only human to survive that deadly sport? Was he the unruly, high-spirited, trouble-prone student of a great Jedi master? The star pilot, the hero, the lover, the Jedi? Could he be all these things? Could he be any of them, and still have done what he has done? He was already discovering the answer at the same time that he finally realized that he needed to ask the question. The deck bucked as the cruiser absorbed a new barrage of torpedoes and turbo laser fire. Dooku's severed, staring head bounced along the deck and rolled away, and Anakin woke up. What? He'd been having a dream. He'd been flying and fighting and fighting again, and somehow in the dream he could do whatever he wanted. In the dream, whatever he did was the right thing to do simply because he wanted to do it. In the dream, there were no rules. There was only power, and the power was his. Now, he stood over a headless corpse that he couldn't bear to see, but he couldn't make himself look away, and he knew it hadn't been a dream at all, that he'd really done this. The blades were still in his hands, and the ocean of wrong he'd dived into had closed over his head, and he was drowning. The dead man's lightsaber tumbled from his loosening fingers. I couldn't stop myself. And before the words left his lips, he heard how hollow and obvious was the lie. You did well, Anakin. Palpatine's voice was warm as an arm around Anakin's shoulders. You did not only well, but right. He was too dangerous to leave alive. From the Chancellor, this sounded true. But when Anakin repeated it inside his head, he knew that Palpatine's truth would be one he could never make himself believe. A tremor that began between his shoulder blades threatened to expand into a full case of the shakes. He was an unarmed prisoner. That now, that simple, unbearable fact, that was truth. Though it burned him like his own lightsaber, truth was something he could hang on to. And somehow it made him feel a little better, a little stronger. He tried another truth. Not that he couldn't have stopped himself, but... I shouldn't have done that, he said. And now his voice came out solid and simple and final. Now he could look down at the corpse at his feet. He could look at the severed head. He could see them for what they were. A crime. He'd become a war criminal. Guilt hit him like a fist. He felt it, a punch to his heart that smacked breath from his lungs and buckled his knees. It hung on his shoulders like a yoke of collapsium, an invisible weight beyond his mortal strength, crushing his life. There were no words in him for this. All he could say was, it was wrong. And that was the sum of it, right there. It was wrong. Nonsense. Disarming him was nothing. He had powers beyond your imagination. Anakin shook his head. That doesn't matter. It's not the Jedi way. The ship shuddered again, and the lights went out. Have you never noticed that the Jedi way, Palpatine said, invisible now within the stark shadow of the General's chair, is not always the right way? Anakin looked toward the shadow. You don't understand. You're not a Jedi. You can't understand. Anakin, listen to me. How many lives have you just saved with the stroke of a lightsaber? Can you count them? But it wasn't wrong, Anakin. It may be not the Jedi way, but it was right. Perfectly natural. He took your hand. You wanted revenge. And your revenge was justice. Revenge is never just. It can't be. Don't be childish, Anakin. Revenge is the foundation of justice. Justice began with revenge, and revenge is still the only justice some beings can ever hope for. After all, this is hardly your first time, is it? Did Dooku deserve mercy more than did the Sand People who tortured your mother to death? That was different. In the Tusken camp, he had lost his mind. He had become a force of nature, indiscriminate, killing with no more thought or intention than a sand gale. The Tuskens had been killed, slaughtered, massacred, but that had been beyond his control, and now it seemed to him as if it had been done by someone else, like a story he had heard that had little to do with him at all. But Dooku had been murdered. By him. On purpose. Here in the General's quarters, he had looked into the eyes of a living being and coldly decided to end that life. He could have chosen the right way. He could have chosen the Jedi way. But instead, he stared down at Dooku's severed head. He could never unchoose this choice. He could never take it back. As Master Windu liked to say, there is no such thing as a second chance. And he wasn't even sure he wanted one. He couldn't let himself think about this, just as he didn't let himself think about the dead on Tatooine. He put his hand to his eyes, trying to rub away the memory. You promised we would never talk about that again. And we won't. Just as we need never speak of what has happened here today. It was though the shadow itself spoke kindly. I have always kept your secrets, have I not? Yes. Yes, of course, Chancellor. But Anakin wanted to crawl away into a corner somewhere. He felt sure that if things would just stop for a while, an hour, a minute, he could pull himself together and find some way to keep moving forward. He had to keep moving forward. Moving forward was all he could do, especially when he couldn't stand to look back. The view wall behind the general's chair blossomed with looping ion spirals of inbound missiles. The shuddering of the ship built itself into a continuous quake, gathering magnitude with each hit. Anakin, my restraints, please, the shadow said. I'm afraid this ship is breaking up. I don't think we should be aboard when it does. In the Force, the field signatures of the magnetic locks on the Chancellor's shackles were as clear as text, saying, unlock me like this. A simple twist of Anakin's mind popped them open. The shadow grew a head, then shoulders, then underwent a sudden mitosis that left the general's chair standing behind and turned its other half into the Supreme Chancellor. Palpatine picked his way through the debris that littered the gloom-shrouded room, moving surprisingly quickly toward the stairs. Come along, Anakin. There is very little time. The view wall flared white with the missile's impacts, and one of them must have damaged the gravity generators. The ship seemed to heel over, forcing Palpatine to clutch desperately at the banister and sending Anakin skidding down a floor that had suddenly become a 45-degree ramp. He rolled hard into a pile of rubble, shattered permacrete, hydrofoamed to reduce weight. Obi-Wan! He sprang to his feet and waved away the debris that had buried the body of his friend. Obi-Wan lay entirely still, eyes closed, dust-caked blood matting his hair where his scalp had split. Bad as Obi-Wan looked, Anakin had stood over the bodies of too many friends on too many battlefields to be panicked by a little blood. One touch to Obi-Wan's throat confirmed the strength of his pulse, and that touch also let Anakin's force perception flow through the whole body of his friend. His breathing was strong and regular, and no bones were broken. This was a concussion, no more. Apparently, Obi-Wan's head was somewhat harder than the cruiser's interior walls. Leave him, Anakin. There is no time. Palpatine was half-hanging from the banister, both arms wrapped around a stanchion. This whole spire may be about to break free. Then we'll all be adrift together. Anakin glanced up at the Supreme Chancellor, and for that instant, he didn't like the man at all. But then he reminded himself that, brave as Palpatine was, his was the courage of conviction. The man was no soldier. He had no way of truly comprehending what he was asking Anakin to do. His fate, he said in case Palpatine had not understood, will be the same as ours. With Obi-Wan unconscious and Palpatine waiting above, with responsibility for the lives of his two closest friends squarely upon him, Anakin found that he had recovered his inner balance. Under pressure, in crisis, with no one to call upon for help, he could focus again. He had to. This was what he'd been born for. Saving people. The Force brought Obi-Wan's lightsaber to his hand, and he clipped it to his friend's belt, then hoisted the limp body over his shoulder and let the Force help him run lightly up the steeply canted floor to Palpatine's side. Impressive, Palpatine said. But then he cast a significant gaze up the staircase, which the vector of the artificial gravity had made into a vertical cliff. But what now? Before Anakin could answer, the erratic gravity swung like a pendulum. While they both clung to the railing, the room seemed to roll around them. All the broken chairs and table fragments and hunks of rubble slid toward the opposite side. And now, instead of a cliff, the staircase had become merely a corrugated stretch of floor. "People say," Anakin nodded toward the door to the turbolift lobby, "when the Force closes a hatch, it opens a viewport. After you."
Chapter 5. Grievous. The ARC-170s of Squad 7 had joined the V-Wings of Squad 4 in swarming the remaining Vulture fighters that had screened the immense Trade Federation flagship Invisible Hand. Clone pilots destroyed droid after droid with machine-like precision of their own. When the last of the Vultures had been converted to an expanding globe of superheated gas, the clone fighters peeled away, leaving Invisible Hand exposed to the full fire of Home Fleet Strike Group 5. Three Carrick-class light cruisers, Integrity, Indomitable, and Perseverance, in support of the dreadnought, Mos Ramdar. Strike Group 5 had deployed in a triangle around Mos Ramdar, maintaining a higher orbit to pin Invisible Hand deep in Coruscant's gravity well. Turbo lasers blasted against Invisible Hand's faltering shields, but the flagship was giving as good as it got. Mos Ramdar had sustained so much damage already that it was little more than a target to absorb the Hand's return fire. And Indomitable was only a shell, most of its crew dead or evacuated, being run remotely by its commander and bridge crew. It swung unsteadily through the Hand's vector cone of escape routes to block any attempt to run up toward jump. As its shields finally failed, Invisible Hand began to roll, whirling like a bullet from a rifled slug thrower, trailing spiral jets of crystallizing gas that gushed from multiple hull ruptures. The rolling picked up speed, breaking the targeting locks of the ship's Republic adversaries. Unable to pound the same point again and again, their turbo lasers weren't powerful enough to breach the Hand's heavy armor directly. Their tracking points became rings that circled the ship, chewing gradually into the hull in tightening garrots of fire. On the Hand's bridge, overheated Nymoidians were strapped into their battle stations in full crash webbing. The air reeked of burning metal and the funk of reptilian stress hormones, and the erratically shifting gravity threatened to add a sharper stench. The faces of several of the bridge officers had already paled from healthy gray-green to nauseated pink. The sole being on the bridge who was not strapped into a chair stalked from one side to the other, floor-length cape draped over shoulders, angular as exposed bone. He ignored the jolts of impact and was unaffected by the swirl of unpredictable gravity as he paced the deck with metal-on-metal clanks. He walked on taloned creations of magnetized duranium, jointed to grab and crush like the feet of a Vractixan blood eagle. His expression could not be read. His face was a mask of bleached ceramic armor plast, stylized to evoke a humanoid skull. But the pure venom in the voice that hissed through the mask's electrosonic vocabulator made up for it.
"Either get the gravity generators calibrated, or disable them altogether,"
he snarled at a blue-scanned image of a cringing Nymoidian engineer.
"If this continues, you won't live long enough to be killed by the Republic."
But, sir, it's really up to the repair droids."
"And because they are droids, it's useless to threaten them. So I am threatening you. Understand?"
He turned away before the stammering engineer could summon a reply. The hand he extended toward the forward view screen wore a jointed gauntlet of armor plast fused to its bones of duranium alloy.
"Concentrate fire on Indomitable,"
he told the senior gunnery officer.
"All batteries at maximum. Fire for effect. Blast that hulk out of space, and we'll make a hyperspace jump through its wreckage."
"But the forward towers are already overloading, sir."
The officer's voice trembled on the edge of panic.
"They'll be at critical failure in less than a minute."
"Burn them out."
But sir, once they're gone...
The rest of the senior gunnery officer's objection was lost in the wetly final crunching sound his face made under the impact of an armor-plast fist. That same fist opened, seized the collar of the officer's uniform, and yanked his corpse out of the chair, ripping the crash webbing free along with it. An expressionless skull face turned toward the junior gunnery officer.
Congratulations on your promotion. Take your post.
Yes, sir.
The newly promoted senior gunnery officer's hands shook so badly he could barely unbuckle his crash web, and his face had gone deathly pink.
Do you understand your orders? Do you have any objections? Very well, then,
General Grievous said with flat, impenetrable calm.
Carry on.
This is General Grievous. Durasteel. Ceramic armor-plast-plated duranium. Electro-drivers and crystal circuitry. Within them, the remnants of a living being. He doesn't breathe. He doesn't eat. He cannot laugh, and he does not cry. A lifetime ago, he was an organic sentient being. A lifetime ago, he had friends, a family, an occupation. A lifetime ago, he had things to love and things to fear. Now he has none of these. Instead, he has purpose. It's built into him. He is built to intimidate. The resemblance to a human skeleton melded with limbs, styled after the legendary Krath war droids, is entirely intentional. It is a face and form born of childhood's infinite nightmares. He is built to dominate. The ceramic armor-plast plates protecting limbs and torso and face can stop a burst from a starfighter's laser cannon. Those indestructible arms are 10 times stronger than human and move with the blurring speed of electronic reflexes. He is built to eradicate. Those human-sized hands have human-sized fingers for exactly one reason: to hold a lightsaber. 4 of them hang inside his cloak. He has never constructed a lightsaber. He has never bought one, nor has he recovered one that was lost. Each and all he has taken from the dead hands of Jedi he has killed. Personally. He has many, many such trophies. The 4 he carries with him are his particular favorites. 1 belonged to the interminable Kikrook, whom he had bested at Hypori. Another to the Virantesi Jedi Jamar, who'd fallen at Vandos. The other 2 had been created by Puroth and Nistamol, whom Grievous had slaughtered together on the flame grass plains of Tovarskil, so that each would know the other's death as well as their own. These are murders he recalls with so much pleasure that touching these souvenirs with his hands of armor-plast and durasteel brings him something resembling joy. But only resembling. He remembers joy. He remembers anger and frustration. He remembers grief and sorrow. He doesn't actually feel any of them. Not anymore. He's not designed for it. White-hot sparks zipped and crackled through the smoke that billowed across the turbolift lobby. Over Anakin's